as I always did, I said, "No, merci." Like I said, Mom would go ballistic if she knew the stuff Grand-Mère did sometimes. There was a boy in my school called... Well, they called him Torto, she continued. He was... How do you say the word? A crippled? Is that how you say it? I don't think people use that word anymore, Grand-Mère, I said. It's not exactly politically correct, if you know what I mean. She flicked her hand at me. Americans are always coming up with new words we can't say anymore, she said. Alors, well, Torto's legs were deformed from the polio. He needed two canes to walk with, and his back was all twisted. I think that's why he was called Torto. Crab. He walked sideways like a crab. I know it sounds very harsh. Children were meaner in those days. I thought about how I called August the freak behind his back, but at least I never called him that to his face. Or did I? Grand-Mère continued talking. I have to admit, at first I wasn't into her telling me one of her long stories, but I was getting into this one. Torto was a little thing, a skinny thing. None of us ever talked to him because he made us uncomfortable. He was so different. I never even looked at him. I was afraid of him. Afraid to look at him, to talk to him. Afraid he would accidentally touch me. It was easier to pretend he didn't exist. She took a long sip of her wine. One morning, a man came running into our school. I knew him. Everyone did. He was a marquis, a partisan. Do you know what that is? He was against the Germans. He rushed into the school and told the teachers that the Germans were coming to take all the Jewish children away. What? What is this? I could not believe what I was hearing. The teachers in the school went around to all the classes and gathered all the Jewish children together. We were told to follow the marquis into the woods. We were going to hide. Hurry, hurry, hurry. I think there were maybe 10 of us in all. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Escape. Grand-Mère looked at me to make sure I was listening, which of course I was. It was snowing that morning, and very cold, and all I could think was, if I go into the woods, I will ruin my shoes. I was wearing these beautiful new red shoes that Papa had brought me, you see? As I said before, I was a frivolous girl, perhaps even a little stupid. But this is what I was thinking. I did not even stop to think, well, where is Maman and Papa? If the Germans were coming for the Jewish children, had they come for their parents already? This did not occur to me. All I could think about were my beautiful shoes. So, instead of following the marquis into the woods, I snuck away from the group and went to hide inside the bell tower of the school. There was a tiny room up there, full of crates and books. And there I hid. I remember thinking I would go home in the afternoon after the Germans came and tell Maman and Papa all about it. This is how stupid I was, Julien. I nodded. I couldn't believe I had never heard this story before. And then the Germans came, she said. There was a narrow window in the tower, and I could see them perfectly. I watched them run into the woods after the children. It did not take them very long to find them. They all came back together. The Germans, the children, the marquis soldier.
Grand-Mère paused and blinked a few times. Then she took a deep breath.
They shot the marquis in front of all the children, she said quietly. He fell so softly, Julianne, in the snow. The children cried. They cried and they were led away in a line. One of the teachers, Mademoiselle Petitjean, went with them, even though she was not Jewish. She said she would not leave her children. No one ever saw her again. Poor thing. By now, Julianne, I had awakened from my stupidity. I was not thinking of my red shoes anymore. I was thinking of my friends who had been taken away. I was thinking of my parents. I was waiting until it was nighttime so I could go home to them. But not all the Germans had left. Some had stayed behind, along with the French police. They were searching the school, and then I realized they were looking for me. Yes, for me, and for the one or two other Jewish children who had not gone into the woods. I realized then that my friend Rachel had not been among the Jewish children who were marched away, nor Jacob, a boy from another village who all the girls wanted to marry because he was so handsome. Where were they? They must have been hiding, just like I was. Then I heard creaking, Julianne. Up the stairs, I heard footsteps up the stairs, coming closer to me. I was so scared. I tried to make myself as small as possible behind the crate, and hid my head beneath a blanket.
Here, Grandmère covered her head with her arms, as if to show to me how she was hiding.
And then I heard someone whisper my name, she said. It was not a man's voice. It was a child's voice. Sarah? The voice whispered again. I peeked out from the blanket.
Torto,
I answered, astonished. I was so surprised, because in all the years I had known him, I don't think I had ever said a word to him, nor him to me. And yet, there he was, calling my name. They will find you here, he said. Follow me. And I did follow him, for by now I was terrified. He led me down a hallway into the chapel of the school, which I had never really been to before. We went to the back of the chapel, where there was a crypt. All this was new to me, Julianne. And we crawled through the crypt so the Germans would not see us through the windows, because they were looking for us still. I heard when they had found Rachel. I heard her screaming in the courtyard as they took her away. Poor Rachel. Torto took me down to the basement beneath the crypt. There must have been 100 steps at least. These were not easy for Torto, as you can imagine, with his terrible limp and his two canes. But he hopped down the steps two at a time, looking behind him to make sure I was following. Finally, we arrived in a passage. It was so narrow we had to walk sideways to get through. And then we were in the sewers, Julianne. Can you imagine? I knew instantly because of the smell, of course. We were knee-deep in refuse. You can imagine the smell. So much for my red shoes. We walked all night. I was so cold, Julianne. Torto was such a kind boy, though. He gave me his coat to wear. It was, to this day, the most noble act anyone has ever done for me. He was freezing, too, but he gave me his coat. I was so ashamed for the way I had treated him. Oh, Julianne, I was so ashamed.
She covered her mouth with her fingers and swallowed. Then she finished the glass of wine and poured herself another.
The sewers led to Danvilliers, a small village about 15 kilometers away from Aubervilliers. Maman and Papa had always avoided this town because of the smell. The sewers from Paris drained onto the farmland there. We wouldn't even eat apples grown in Danvilliers. But it's where Torteau lived. He took me to his house, and we cleaned ourselves by the well. And then Torteau brought me to the barn behind his house. He wrapped me up in a horse blanket and told me to wait. He was going to get his parents. No, I pleaded. Please don't tell them. I was so frightened. I wondered if, when they saw me, they would call the Germans. You know, I had never met them before. But Torteau left, and a few minutes later, he returned with his parents. They looked at me. I must have looked quite pathetic there, all wet and shivering. The mother, Vivienne, wrapped her arms around me to comfort me. Oh, Julien, that hug was the warmest hug I have ever felt. I cried so hard in this woman's arms, because I knew then, I knew I would never cry in my own maman's arms again. I just knew it in my heart, Julien. And I was right. They had taken maman that same day, along with all the other Jews in the city. My father, who had been at work, had been warned that the Germans were coming and managed to escape. He was smuggled to Switzerland, but it was too late for maman. She was deported that day to Auschwitz. I never saw her again. My beautiful maman. She took a deep breath here and shook her head. Torteau. Grand-mère was silent for a few seconds. She was looking into the air like she could see it all happening again right in front of her. Now I understood why she'd never talked about this before. It was too hard for her. Torteau's family hid me for 2 years in that barn, she continued slowly. Even though it was so dangerous for them, we were literally surrounded by Germans, and the French police had a large headquarters in Danvilliers. But every day, I thanked my maker for the barn that was my home, and the food that Torteau managed to bring me, even when there was hardly any food to go around. People were starving in those days, Julien, and yet they fed me. It was a kindness that I will never forget. It is always brave to be kind, but in those days, such kindnesses could cost you your life. Grand-mère started to get teary-eyed at this point. She took my hand. The last time I saw Torteau was 2 months before the liberation. He had brought me some soup. It wasn't even soup. It was water with a little bit of bread and onions in it. We had both lost so much weight. I was in rags. So much for my pretty clothes. Even so, we managed to laugh, Torteau and I. We laughed about things that happened in our school. Even though I could not go there anymore, of course, Torteau still went every day. At night, he would tell me everything he had learned so that I would stay smart. He would tell me about all my old friends, too, and how they were doing. They all still ignored him, of course, and he never revealed to any of them that I was still alive. No one could know. No one could be trusted. But Torteau was an excellent narrator, and he made me laugh a lot. He could do wonderful imitations, and he even had funny nicknames for all my friends. Imagine that. Torteau was making fun of them. I had no idea you were so mischievous, I told him. All those years, you were probably laughing at me behind my back, too. "Laughing at you?" he said. "Never. I had a crush on you. I never laughed at you. Besides, I only laughed at the kids who made fun of me. You never made fun of me. You simply ignored me. I called you Torto. And so? Everyone called me that. I really don't mind. I like crabs. Oh, Torto, I am so ashamed," I answered. And I remember I covered my face with both my hands.
At this point, Grammaire covered her face with her hands. Although her fingers were bent with arthritis now, and I could see her veins, I pictured her young hands covering her young face so many years ago.
"Torto took my hands with his own hands,"
she continued, slowly removing her hands from her face.
"And he held my hands for a few seconds. I was 14 years old then, and I had never kissed a boy. But he kissed me that day, Julien."
Grammaire closed her eyes. She took a deep breath.
"After he kissed me," she continued, "I said to him, 'I don't want to call you Torto anymore. What is your name?'"
Grammaire opened her eyes and looked at me.
"Can you guess what he said?"
she asked. I raised my eyebrows as if to say, "No, how would I know?" Then she closed her eyes again and smiled.
"He said, 'My name is Julien.'"
Julien.
"Oh my God," I cried. "That's why you named Dad Julien."
Even though everyone calls him Jules, that was his name.
"Oui,"
she said, nodding.
"And I'm named after Dad," I said. "So I'm named after this kid. That is so cool."
She smiled and ran her fingers through my hair. But she didn't say anything. Then I remembered her saying,
"The last time I saw Torto."
"So what happened to him?" I asked. "To Julien?"
Almost instantaneously, tears rolled down Grammaire's cheeks.
"The Germans took him," she said, "that same day. He was on his way to school. They were making another sweep of the village that morning. By now, Germany was losing the war, and they knew it."
"But," I said, "he wasn't even Jewish."
"They took him because he was crippled," she said between sobs. "I'm sorry. I know you told me that word is a bad word, but I don't know another word in English. He was an invalide. That is the word in French. And that is why they took him. He was not perfect."
She practically spat out the word.
"They took all the imperfects from the village that day. It was a purge. The gypsies, the shoemaker's son, who was simple, and Julien, my Torto. They put him in a cart with the others, and then he was put on a train to Drancy, and from there to Auschwitz, like my mother. We heard later from someone who saw him there that they sent him to the gas chambers right away. Just like that, poof, he was gone. My savior, my little Julien."
She stopped to wipe her eyes with a handkerchief, and then drank the rest of the wine.
"His parents were devastated, of course. Monsieur Beaumier and Madame Beaumier," she continued. "We didn't find out he was dead until after the liberation. But we knew. We knew."
She dabbed her eyes.
"I lived with them for another year after the war. They treated me like a daughter. They were the ones who helped track down Papa, although it took some time to find him. So much chaos in those days, when Papa was finally able to return to Paris. I went to live with him, but I always visited the Beaumiers, even when they were very old. I never forgot the kindness they showed me."
She sighed. She had finished her story. "Grammaire," I said after a few minutes, "that's like the saddest thing I've ever heard. I didn't even know you were in the war. I mean, Dad's never talked about any of this." She shrugged.
"I think it's very possible that I never told your father this story," she said. "I don't like to talk about sad things, you know. In some ways, I am still the frivolous girl I used to be. But when I heard you talking about that little boy in your school, I could not help but think of Torto, of how afraid I had once been of him, of how badly we had treated him because of his deformity. Those children had been so mean to him, Julien. It breaks my heart to think of it."
When she said that, I don't know, something just really broke inside of me. Completely unexpected. I looked down, and all of a sudden, I started to cry. And when I say I started to cry, I don't mean a few tears rolling down my cheeks. I mean like full-scale, snot-filled crying.
"Julien," she said softly.
I shook my head and covered my face with my hands.
"I was terrible, Grammaire," I whispered. "I was so mean to Augie. I'm so sorry, Grammaire."
"Julien," she said again, "look at me."
"No."
"Look at me, mon cher." She took my face in her hands and forced me to look at her. I felt so embarrassed. I really couldn't look her in the eyes. Suddenly, that word that Mr. Tushman had used, that word that everyone kept trying to force on me, came to me like a shout. Remorse. Yeah, there it was. That word in all its glory. Remorse. I was shaking with remorse. I was crying with remorse.
"Julien," said Grammaire, "we all make mistakes, mon cher."
"No, you don't understand," I answered. "It wasn't just one mistake. I was those kids who were mean to Torto. I was the bully, Grammaire. It was me." She nodded.
"I called him a freak. I laughed behind his back. I left mean notes," I screamed. "Mom kept making excuses for why I did that stuff, but there wasn't any excuse. I just did it, and I don't even know why. I don't even know."
I was crying so hard I couldn't even speak. Grammaire stroked my head and hugged me.
"Julien," she said softly, "you are so young. The things you did, you know they were not right. But that does not mean you are not capable of doing right. It only means that you chose to do wrong. This is what I mean when I say you made a mistake. It was the same with me. I made a mistake with Torto. But the good thing about life, Julien," she continued, "is that we can fix our mistakes sometimes. We learn from them. We get better. I never made a mistake like the one I made with Torto again. Not with anyone in my life. And I have had a very, very long life. You will learn from your mistake, too. You must promise yourself that you will never behave like that with anyone else again. One mistake does not define you, Julien. Do you understand me? You must simply act better next time."
I nodded, but I still cried for a long, long time after that. My dream. That night, I dreamt about Augie. I don't remember the details of the dream, but I think we were being chased by Nazis. Augie was captured, but I had a key to let him out. And in my dream, I think I saved him. Or maybe that's what I told myself when I woke up. Sometimes it's hard to know with dreams. I mean, in this dream, the Nazis all looked like Darth Vader's Imperial officers anyway, so it's hard to put too much meaning into dreams sometimes. But what was really interesting to me when I thought about it is that it had been a dream, not a nightmare. And in the dream, Augie and I were on the same side. I woke up super early because of the dream and didn't go back to sleep. I kept thinking about Augie and Torton, Julien, the heroic boy I was named for. It's weird. This whole time I had been thinking about Augie like he was my enemy. But when Grand-Mère told me that story, I don't know. It all kind of just sank in with me. I kept thinking of how ashamed the original Julien would be to know that someone who carried his name had been so mean. I kept thinking about how sad Grand-Mère was when she told the story, how she could remember all the details, even though it happened like 70 years ago. 70 years! Would Augie remember me in 70 years? Would he still remember the mean things I called him? I don't want to be remembered for stuff like that. I would want to be remembered the way Grand-Mère remembers Torton. Mr. Tushman, I get it now. R-E-M-O-R-S-E. I got up as soon as it was light out and wrote this note. Dear Augie, I want to apologize for the stuff I did last year. I've been thinking about it a lot. You didn't deserve it. I wish I could have a do-over. I would be nicer. I hope you don't remember how mean I was when you're 80 years old. Have a nice life. Julian. P.S. If you're the one who told Mr. Tushman about the notes, don't worry. I don't blame you. When Grand-Mère woke up that afternoon, I read her the note. I'm proud of you, Julian, she said, squeezing my shoulder. Do you think he'll forgive me? She thought about it. That's up to him, she answered. In the end, mon cher, all that matters is that you forgive yourself. You are learning from your mistake, like I learned with Torton. Do you think Torton would forgive me? I asked. If he knew his namesake had been so mean? She kissed my hand. Torton would forgive you. And I could tell she meant it. Going home. I realized I didn't have Augie's address, so I wrote another email to Mr. Brown asking him if I could send him my note to Augie and have him mail it to him for me. Mr. Brown emailed me back immediately. He was happy to do it. He also said he was proud of me. I felt good about that. I mean, like, really good. And it felt good to feel good. Kind of hard to explain, but I guess I was tired of feeling like I was this awful kid. I'm not. Like I keep saying over and over again, I'm just an ordinary kid. A typical, normal, ordinary kid who made a mistake. But now I was trying to make it right. My parents arrived a week later. Mom couldn't stop hugging and kissing me. This was the longest I'd ever been away from home. I was excited to tell them about the email from Mr. Brown and the note I had written to Augie. But they told me their news first. We're suing the school, said Mom excitedly. What? I cried. Dad is suing them for breach of contract, she said. She was practically chirping. I looked at Grand-Mère, who didn't say anything. We were all having dinner. They had no right to withdraw the enrollment contract. Dad explained calmly, like a lawyer. Not before we had been placed in another school. Hal told me, in his office, that they would wait to rescind their enrollment offer until after we had gotten accepted into another school. And they would return the money. We had a verbal agreement.
But I was going to another school anyway, I said.
Doesn't matter, he said. Even if they return the money, it's the principle of the thing.
What principle? Said Grommaire.
She got up from the table.
This is nonsense, Jules. Stupid. Stupid. Complete and utter nonsense.
Maman, said Dad.
He looked really surprised. So did Mom.
You should drop this stupidity, said Grommaire.
You don't really know the details, Maman, said Dad.
I know all the details, she yelled,
shaking her fist in the air. She looked fierce.
The boy was wrong, Jules. Your boy was in the wrong. He knows it. You know it. He did bad things to that other boy, and he is sorry for them. And you should let it be.
Mom and Dad looked at each other.
With all due respect, Sarah, said Mom, I think we know what's best for... No, you don't know anything, yelled Grommaire. You don't know. You two are too busy with lawsuits and stupid things like that.
Maman, said Dad.
She's right, Dad, I said.
It was all my fault. All that stuff with Augie, it was my fault. I was mean to him, for no reason. It was my fault Jack punched me. I had just called Augie a freak.
What? Said Mom.
I wrote those awful notes, I said quickly. I did mean stuff. It was my fault. I was the bully, Mom. It wasn't anyone else's fault but mine.
Mom and Dad didn't seem to know what to answer.
Instead of sitting there like two idiots, said Grommaire,
who always said things like they were,
you should be praising Julien for this admission. He is taking responsibility. He is owning up to his mistakes. It takes much courage to do this kind of thing.
Yes, of course, said Dad, rubbing his chin and looking at me. But I just don't think you understand all the legal ramifications. The school took our tuition and refused to return it, which...
Blah, 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 said Grommaire, waving him away.
I wrote him an apology, I said, to Augie. I wrote him an apology and I sent it to him in the mail. I apologized for the way I acted.
You what? Said Dad.
He was getting mad now.
And I told Mr. Brown the truth, too, I added. I wrote Mr. Brown a long email telling him the whole story.
Julien, said Dad, frowning angrily. Why did you do that? I told you I didn't want you to write anything that acknowledged...
Jules,
said Grommaire loudly, waving her hand in front of Dad's face.
Toi en cerveau comme un sandwich en fromage.
I couldn't help but laugh at this. Dad cringed.
What did she say?
Asked Mom, who didn't know French.
Grommaire just told Dad he has a brain like a cheese sandwich, I said.
Maman,
Dad said sternly, like someone who was about to begin a long lecture. But Mom reached out and put her hand on Dad's arm.
Jules, she said quietly, I think your mom is right.
Unexpected. Sometimes people surprise you. Never in a million years would I have thought my mom would be the one to back down from anything, so I was completely shocked by what she had just said. I could tell Dad was, too. He looked at Mom like he couldn't believe what she was saying. Grommaire was the only one who didn't seem surprised.
Are you kidding me? Dad said to Mom.
Mom shook her head slowly.
Jules, we should end this. We should move on. Your mother's right.
Dad raised his eyebrows. I knew he was mad, but trying not to show it.
You're the one who got us on this warpath, Melissa.
I know, she answered, taking her glasses off. Her eyes were really shiny.
I know, I know. And I thought it was the right thing to do at the time.
I still don't think Tushman was right, the way he handled everything, but
I'm ready to put all this behind us now, Jules. I think we should just let go and move forward.
She shrugged. She looked at me.
It was very big of Julian to reach out to that boy, Jules. It takes a lot of guts to do that.
She looked back at Dad.
We should be supportive.
I am supportive, of course, said Dad. But this is such a complete about-face, Melissa. I mean,
he shook his head and rolled his eyes at the same time.
Mom sighed. She didn't know what to say.
Look here, said Grommer. Whatever Melissa did, she did it because she wanted Julian to be happy. And that is all. C'est tout. And he's happy now. You can see it in his eyes. For the first time in a long time, your son looks completely happy.
That's exactly right, said Mom, wiping a tear from her face. I felt kind of sorry for Mom at that moment. I could tell she felt bad about some of the things she had done.
Dad, I said,
please don't sue the school.
I don't want that. Okay, Dad?
Please?
Dad leaned back in his chair and made a soft whistle sound, like he was blowing out a candle in slow motion. Then he started clicking his tongue against the roof of his mouth. It was a long minute that he stayed like that. We just watched him. Finally, he sat back up in his chair and looked at us. He shrugged.
Okay, he said, his palms up. I'll drop the lawsuit. We'll just walk away from the tuition money. Are you sure that's what you want, Melissa?
Mom nodded. I'm sure. Grommer sighed.
Victory at last, she mumbled into her wine glass.
Starting over. We went home a week later, but not before Grommer took us to a very special place, the village she grew up in. It seemed amazing to me that she had never told Dad the whole Tortol story. The only thing he knew was that a family in Danvilliers had helped her during the war. But she had never told him any of the details. She had never told him that his own grandmother had died in a concentration camp.
Maman, how come you never told me any of this? Dad asked her while we were driving in the car to her village.
Oh, you know me, Jules, she answered. I do not like to dwell on the past. Life is ahead of us. If we spend too much time looking backward, we can't see where we are going.
Much of the village had changed. Too many bombs and grenades had been dropped. Most of the original houses had been destroyed in the war. Grommer's school was gone. There was really nothing much to see, just Starbucks and shoe stores. But then we drove to Danvilliers, which is where Julien had lived. That village was intact. She took us to the barn where she had stayed for 2 years. The old farmer who lived there now let us walk around and take a look. Grommer found her initials scrawled in a little nook in one of the horse stalls, which is where she would hide under piles of hay whenever the Nazis were nearby. Grommer stood in the middle of the barn, with one hand on her face as she looked around. She looked so tiny there.
How are you doing, Grommer? I asked.
Me? Ah. Well, she said, smiling.
She tilted her head.
I lived. I remember thinking, when I was staying here, that the smell of horse manure would never leave my nostrils. But I lived. And Jules was born because I lived.
and you were born. So what is the smell of horse manure against all that? Perfume and time make everything easier to bear. Now, there's one more place I want to visit.
We drove about 10 minutes away to a tiny cemetery on the outskirts of the village. Grammaire took us directly to a tombstone at the edge of the graveyard. There was a small white ceramic plaque on the tombstone. It was in the shape of a heart, and it read, Ici repose. Vivienne Baumier, née le 27 d'avril 1905, décédée le 21 de novembre 1985. Jean-Paul Baumier, né le 15 de mai 1901, décédée le 5 de juillet 1985. Mère et père de Julien Auguste Baumier, né le 10 d'octobre 1930, tomba en juin 1944. Puisse-t-il toujours marcher le front au dans le jardin de Dieu?
I looked at Grand-mère as she stood looking at the plaque. She kissed her fingers and then reached down to touch it. She was trembling.
They treated me like their daughter, she said,
tears rolling down her cheeks. She started sobbing. I took her hand and kissed it. Mom took Dad's hand.
What does the plaque say?
She asked softly, since she can't read French. Dad cleared his throat.
Here rests Vivienne Baumier, he translated softly, and Jean-Paul Baumier. Mother and father of Julien Auguste Baumier, born October 10th, 1930, killed June 1944. May he walk forever tall in the garden of the Lord.
New York. We got back to NYC a week before my new school was scheduled to start. It was nice being in my room again. My things were all the same. But I felt, I don't know, a little different. I can't explain it. I felt like I really was starting over. I'll help you unpack in a minute, said Mom, running off to the bathroom as soon as we stepped through the door. I'm good, I answered. I could hear Dad in the living room listening to our answering machine messages. I started unpacking my suitcase. Then I heard a familiar voice on the machine. I stopped what I was doing and walked into the living room. Dad looked up and paused the machine. Then he replayed the message for me to hear. It was Augie Pullman.
Oh, hi, Julian, said the message.
Yeah, so,
I just wanted to tell you I got your note. And,
yeah.
Thanks for writing it. No need to call me back. I just wanted to say, hey, we're good. Oh, and by the way, it wasn't me who told Tushman about the notes, just so you know. Or Jack or Summer. I really don't know how he found out. Not that it matters anyway. So, okay. Anyway, I hope you like your new school. Good luck. Bye.
Click. Dad looked at me to see how I would react.
Wow, I said. I didn't expect that at all.
Are you going to call him back? Asked Dad.
I shook my head. Nah, I answered. I'm too chicken.
Dad walked over to me and put his hand on my shoulder.
I think you've proven that you're anything but chicken, he said. I'm proud of you, Julian. Very proud of you.
He leaned over and hugged me.
Tu marches toujours le front haut.
I smiled. I hope so, Dad. I hope so.
Pluto, A Wonder Story by R.J. Palacio. Performed by Scott Merriman. Contemporary observations are changing our understanding of planetary systems, and it is important that our nomenclature for objects reflect our current understanding. This applies in particular to the designation planets. The word planet originally described wanderers that were known only as moving lights in the sky. Recent discoveries led us to create a new definition, which we can make using currently available scientific information. International Astronomical Union, IAU, excerpt from Resolution B5. I guess there is no one to blame. We are leaving ground. Will things ever be the same? Europe, the final countdown. It is such a mysterious place, the land of tears. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, The Little Prince. Introductions. I was 2 days old the first time I met Augie Pullman. I don't remember the occasion myself, obviously, but my mom told me about it. She and Dad had just brought me home from the hospital for the first time, and Augie's parents had just brought him home from the hospital for the first time, too. But Augie was already 3 months old by then. He had to stay in the hospital because he needed some surgeries that would allow him to breathe and swallow. Breathing and swallowing are things most of us don't ever think about because we do them automatically. But they weren't automatic for Augie when he was born. My parents took me over to Augie's house so we could meet each other. Augie was hooked up to a lot of medical equipment in their living room. My mom picked me up and brought me face to face with Augie. "August Matthew Pullman," she said. "This is Christopher Angus Blake, your new oldest friend." And our parents applauded and toasted the happy occasion. My mom and Augie's mom, Isabel, became best friends before we were born. They met at the supermarket on Amesford Avenue right after my parents moved to the neighborhood. Since both of them were having babies soon, and they lived across the street from each other, Mom and Isabel decided to form a mother's group. A mother's group is when a bunch of moms hang out together and have playdates with other kids' moms. There were about 6 or 7 other moms in the mother's group at first. They hung out together a couple of times before any of the babies were born. But after Augie was born, only 2 other moms stayed in the mother's group. Zachary's mom and Alex's mom. I don't know what happened to the other moms in the group. Those first couple of years, the 4 moms in the mother's group, along with us babies, hung out together almost every day. The moms would go jogging through the park with us in our strollers. They would take long walks along the riverfront with us in our baby slings. They would have lunch at the Heights Lounge with us in our baby chairs. The only times Augie and his mom didn't hang out with the mother's group was when Augie was back in the hospital. He needed a lot of operations because, just like with breathing and swallowing, there were other things that didn't come automatically to him. For instance, he couldn't eat. He couldn't talk. He couldn't really even close his mouth all the way. These were things that the doctors had to operate on him so that he could do them. But even after the surgeries, Augie never really ate or talked or closed his mouth all the way like me and Zach and Alex did. Even after the surgeries, Augie was very different from us. I don't think I really understood how different Augie was from everyone else until I was 4 years old. It was wintertime, and Augie and I were wrapped in our parkas and scarves while we played outside on the playground. At one point, we climbed up the ladder to the ramp at the top of the jungle gym and waited in line to go down the tall slide. When we were almost next, the little girl in front of us got cold feet about going down the tall slide, so she turned around to let us pass. That's when she saw Augie. Her eyes opened really wide and her jaw dropped down and she started screaming and crying hysterically. She was so upset she couldn't even climb down the ladder. Her mom had to climb up the ramp to get her. Then Augie started to cry because he knew the girl was crying because of him. He covered his face with his scarf so nobody could see him, and then his mom, Isabel, had to climb up the ramp to get him too. I don't remember all the details, but I remember there was a big commotion. A little crowd had formed around the slide. People were whispering. I remember us leaving the playground very quickly. I remember seeing tears in Isabel's eyes as she carried Augie home. That was the first time I realized how different Augie was from the rest of us. It wasn't the last time, though. Like breathing and swallowing, Crying comes automatically to most kids, too. 7:08 a.m. I don't know why I was thinking about Augie this morning. It's been 3 years since we moved away, and I haven't even seen him since his bowling party in October. Maybe I'd had a dream about him. I don't know. But I was thinking about him when Mom came into my room a few minutes after I turned off my alarm clock.
"You awake, sweetie?" she said softly.
I pulled my pillow over my head as an answer.
"Time to wake up, Chris," she said cheerfully, opening the curtains of my window. Even under my pillow with my eyes closed, I could tell my room was way too bright now.
"Close the curtains," I mumbled. "Looks like it's going to rain all day today," she sighed, not closing the curtains.
"Come on, you don't want to be late again today, and you have to take a shower this morning."
"I took a shower like 2 days ago."
"Exactly."
"Ugh," I groaned.
"Let's go, honey boy," she said, patting the top of my pillow.
I pulled the pillow off my face.
"Okay," I yelled. "I'm up. Are you happy?"
"You are such a grump in the morning," she said, shaking her head. "What happened to my sweet fourth grader from last year?"
"Lisa,"
I answered. She hated when I called her by her first name. I thought she'd leave my room then, but she started picking some clothes off my floor and putting them in my hamper.
"Did something happen last night, by the way?" I said, my eyes still closed. "I heard you on the phone with Isabel when I was going to sleep last night. It sounded like something bad."
She sat down on the edge of my bed. I rubbed my eyes awake.
"What?" I said. "Is it really bad? I think I had a dream about Augie last night."
"No, Augie's fine," she answered, scrunching up her face a bit. She pushed some hair out of my eyes.
"I was going to wait till later to..."
"What?" I interrupted.
"I'm afraid Daisy died last night, sweetie."
"What?"
"I'm sorry, honey."
"Daisy?" I covered my face with my hands.
"I'm sorry, sweetie. I know how much you loved Daisy."
Darth Daisy.
I remember the day Augie's dad brought Daisy home for the first time. Augie and I were playing Trouble in his room when all of a sudden we heard high-pitched squealing coming from the front door. It was Via, Augie's big sister. We could also hear Isabel and Lourdes, my babysitter, talking excitedly, so we ran downstairs to see what the commotion was about. Nate, Augie's dad, was sitting on one of the kitchen chairs holding a squirming, crazy yellow dog in his lap. Via was kneeling down in front of the dog trying to pet it, but the dog was kind of hyper and kept trying to lick her hand, which Via kept pulling away.
"A dog!"
Augie screamed excitedly, running over to his dad. I ran over too, but Lourdes grabbed me by the arm.
"Oh no, papi,"
she said to me. She had just started babysitting me in those days, so I didn't know her very well. I remember she used to put baby powder in my sneakers, which I still do now because it reminds me of her. Isabel's hands were on the sides of her face. It was obvious that Nate had just come through the door.
"I can't believe you did this, Nate," she was saying over and over again.
She was standing on the other side of the room next to Lourdes.
"Why can't I pet him?"
I asked Lourdes.
"Because Nate says 3 hours ago this dog lived on the street with a homeless man," she answered quickly. "It's disgusting."
"She's not disgusting, she's beautiful," said Via, kissing the dog on her forehead.
"In my country, dogs stay outside," said Lourdes.
"He's so cute," Augie said.
"It's a she,"
Via said quickly, nudging Augie.
"Be careful, Augie," said Isabel. "Don't let her lick you in the face."
But the dog was already licking Augie all over his face.
"The vet said she's perfectly healthy, guys," Nate said to both Isabel and Lourdes.
"Nate, she was living on the street," Isabel answered quickly. "Who knows what she's carrying?"
"The vet gave her all her shots, a tick bath, checked for worms," answered Nate. "This puppy's got a clean bill of health."
"That is not a puppy, Nate,"
Isabel pointed out.
That was true. The dog was definitely not a puppy. She wasn't little or soft and round like puppies usually are. She was skinny and pointy and wild-eyed, and she had this crazy long black tongue kind of pouring out of the side of her mouth. And she wasn't a small dog, either. She was the same size as my grandmother's Labradoodle.
Okay, said Nate. Well, she's puppy-like.
What kind of dog is she? Asked Augie.
The vet thinks a yellow lab mix, answered Nate. Maybe some chow?
More like pit bull, said Isabel. Did he at least tell you how old she is?
Nate shrugged. He couldn't tell for sure, he answered. 2 or 3? Usually they judge from the teeth, but hers are in bad shape because, you know, she's probably been eating junk food all her life.
Garbage and dead rats,
Lourdes said, like it was for sure.
Oh, God,
Isabel muttered, rubbing her hand over her face.
Her breath does smell pretty bad,
said Via, waving her hand in front of her nose. Isabel, said Nate, looking up at her, she was destined for us.
Wait, you mean we're keeping her?
Via said excitedly, her eyes opening up really wide.
I thought we were just babysitting her until we could find her a home.
I think we should be her home, said Nate.
Really, Daddy?
Cried Augie, his mouth open. Nate smiled and pointed his chin at Isabel. But it's up to Mommy, guys, he said.
Are you kidding me, Nate?
Cried Isabel as Via and Augie ran over to her and started pleading with her, putting their hands together like they were praying in church.
Please, 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 please,
they kept saying over and over again.
Please, pretty please, 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 please. I can't believe you're doing this to me, Nate, said Isabel, shaking her head. Like our lives aren't complicated enough.
Nate smiled and looked down at the dog, who was looking at him. Look at her, honey. She was starving and cold. The homeless guy offered to sell her to me for $10. What was I going to do, say no?
Yes, said Lourdes. Very easy to do.
It's good karma to save a dog's life, answered Nate.
Don't do it, Isabel, said Lourdes. Dogs are dirty and smelly, and they have germs, and you know who will end up walking her all the time, picking up all the poo-poo.
She pointed at Isabel.
That's not true, Mommy, said Via. I promise I'll walk her every day.
Me too, Mommy, said Augie.
We'll take care of her completely, continued Via. We'll feed her. We'll do everything.
Everything,
added Augie.
Please, 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 Mommy. Please, 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 Mommy,
Via said at the same time. Isabel was rubbing her forehead with her fingers like she had a headache. Finally, she looked at Nate and shrugged.
I think this is crazy, but... Okay, fine.
Really?
Shrieked Via, hugging Isabel tightly.
Thank you, Mommy. Thank you so much. I promise we'll take care of her.
Thank you, Mommy,
repeated Augie, hugging Isabel. Yay! Thank you, Isabel, said Nate, clapping the dog's 2 front paws together. Can I please pet her now? I said to Lourdes, pulling away from her grip before she could stop me again. I slid over between Augie and Via. Nate put the dog down on the rug then, and she literally turned over onto her back so that we would all scratch her tummy. She closed her eyes like she was smiling, her long black tongue hanging from the side of her mouth onto the rug.
That's exactly how I found her today, Nate pointed out.
I've never seen a longer tongue in my life, said Isabel, crouching down next to us. She still hadn't pet the dog yet, though. She looks like the Tasmanian devil. I think she's beautiful, said Via. What's her name?
What do you want to name her? Asked Nate.
I think we should name her Daisy, answered Via without any hesitation at all. She's yellow, like a daisy.
That's a nice name, said Isabel, who started petting the dog. Then again, she looks a little like a lion. We could call her Elsa.